As above, so below.
Welcome to Connecting with Coincidence. I am your host, Bernard Beitman, MD. I'm a psychiatrist. I'm interested in meaningful coincidences, otherwise known as serendipity and synchronicity. I'm a psychotherapist, and yesterday I was dealing with a patient who made contact with a guy who had killed himself accidentally and is stuck out there in limbo, regretting that he died so young. He was 19. And it looks like she has been selected by him to help him resolve this stuckedness that he has in the spirit world. So this is a good opening for who we're talking about, who we're talking with today. But meanwhile, you can order my book, Meaningful Coincidence, How and Why Synchronicity and Serendipity Happen, in any way that you order books, and you get some idea about where I am coming from if you haven't seen it. But as usual, I will tell a coincidence story, and I call this one a river trio. The river trio was me walking along the river in Charlottesville, where it seems to be a lot of things happening, where I met Rob by another coincidence. And as we got to know each other, he asked if I knew anybody who could make an official Asperger diagnosis or high-functioning autism. So it turned out that somebody who could do that was me. It took me a while to figure that out. And so I interviewed him. He was a classic. I sent the evaluation to his primary care physician as he requested. He told me later that he had imagined finding a psychiatrist with whom he was compatible to do this evaluation. I was his vision come true. Well, at dance a few weeks later, I go to dance pretty regularly on the weekends. I saw a young man named Phoenix with his head in his hands. I didn't know him then. So I asked him what was troubling him, and he said, "I have Asperger's, and I have trouble handling my emotions." A few weeks later, I saw Phoenix at dance again and invited him to come along to the river for a walk with Rob and me. I described Rob. Phoenix laughed. "Rob lives behind me, and I have been meaning to get together with him. We have much in common. You are truly Dr. Coincidence." I love doing that stuff, man. It's so much fun. Our guest today is a remarkable woman named Linda McKenzie, a former datacom engineer for the airlines, globally known radio TV expert in psychic and bioenergetic healing, and founder of the 21-year Health Life Net, all positive talk radio network. I've talked with Linda before. She is amazing. There are 17 distinct psychic abilities, and she has 16 of them. She won't do one of them where an entity comes into your body and speaks through you. That's one she's not doing. She's been using her psychic abilities for over 50 years. And as you will find out, she doesn't believe in coincidences. And as many of you know, if you have an explanation for a coincidence, it's no longer a coincidence. So, Linda, welcome to Connecting with Coincidence. It's great to connect with you again.
Well, it's great to be here. And it's good to share things, because I think as we educate people and they can understand that everything exists, and that there's no mistakes, and we can go through life and be better and greater.
Well, this idea that there's no mistakes is a very important one, because regret is a big problem for people. I wish I hadn't have done that. I still do that, but I learned to be able to turn that in the direction you're talking about. It's another learning experience we have to be able to use somehow and figure it out, because it's all there. You've got to make mistakes in order to learn.
Right. You know, one of the things that I did many years ago, I still do, is it's a funny story, so you'll enjoy this one. I worry about everything. You know, it was just, you know, I just worry. And so worry is such a needless emotion because you can't go forward, you can't go back, you just stay in it. So I was out, I had a metaphysical company at the time. I was in International New Age Trade Show, and there was this psychic girl from Ireland, and she goes, Linda, you know, why are you worrying? And she says, what's the problem? And I said, well, this is the problem. She says, no. She says, you got to do like pesky flies. They're flying around your head. And every time you get a worry thought, she says, you swat the flies away. She says, no matter where you go, swat them away. And what that did. So here I was going on the plane to the airport from Denver, and I'm going, choo, 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 choo. And people are thinking that I'm crazy, right? But the thing is what it did was it brought my consciousness to and mindfulness to the thought and the spot where I was worrying so that I could let it go faster. So sometimes these things are so deep in our bodies that they may be even ancestral things that are, you know, keep us worrying and worrying and worrying in our DNA somewhere. And so what happens is that if we get mindful enough, we can't maybe stop them, but we can get out of them quicker. That's what I found.
Keep swatting. And I had some body work done the other day, and I had never experienced this well of anxiety so clearly. That the guy working on me, who turns out to be the Rob I mentioned earlier, said what you already know. These anxieties get caught up in our bodies, and it's, you can do a lot of psychological work, but the bodies have them maybe ancestrally. And I think that it is. I think there's so important for us to recognize that we are not just us here right now. We are the current version of a lot of genetics and history of our families and a lot more our cultures, and we are just the tip of it right now existing, and we carry with us a lot of that stuff.
I totally agree.
Well, I thought you would, and we do. And now we're going to go on to Linda.
Please
tell us. I know, please tell us a coincidence story, even though, how about a synchronicity story? Now, it's important when I ask this, Linda has told me she lives it every day. She has a lot of synchronicities, or whatever we might call them, every day. So I'm opening it up to you to talk about you and synchronicity, Linda.
Oh, boy. We'll have to start at the beginning, way back in the beginning. When I was about 8 years old, you know, my father was, I was born in New York in the Bronx. And then I lived in Staten Island for, you know, I guess 27 years. Then I moved out here to California. And in my house, my father was Italian. My mother was Irish. So there was always this tremendous fighting all the time, yelling and screaming and making up and doing all of that stuff. And I would take refuge in church, you know, and where I grew up was by the Staten Island Ferry, which wasn't a great area at that time. And so I would go to church all the time and just to get away from the noise. And then one day when I was about, I would walk down to meet my father. He was a postage handler, you know, baggage handler. And I would go down to the end of the street to meet him when he got off the bus. And as I was walking home, he didn't get on the bus. He didn't make it one day. So I said, okay, I'll just go home. And I go, and there was this lot. And it looked like, for me as a kid, one city lot, you know how small they are. It looked like a tremendous park to us, you know, because everything is so close in New York. And so I sat down, and as I looked up, I saw God. And God, of course, is not the man with the white beard, but to a child at 8 years old who was trained in Catholicism, that's what the guy was, you know, then, you know, what you want to do is you want to, recognize that. And so he just appeared, or energy just appeared to me. The next day I got all of the 17 abilities, but I didn't realize it. I was eight. So
the next day.
And it was overwhelming for me because I didn't know how to handle it, what to do with it.
What do you think happened right there, Linda?
I don't know. I mean, I just have to say that it was the beginning of my education.
It was the beginning of, there was this lot, this huge lot that was
Right.
huge to you, and something appeared in the lot.
Well, it was in the sky,
It was in the
in the
sky.
clouds.
It was in the clouds.
Yeah.
And try to describe as best you can what was in the clouds.
Well, the clouds was it was a man, with a long white beard. It looked like God. And I just emerged with him. I just merged. I mean, it was like this white light that I'd never seen before, a white that was so white that I don't know if you would call it white. It was just brilliant. And then it would be, he came in and merged, and I was completely at peace. And then I don't know how long I was there. And then he kind of faded away, and I went home. The
This,
next, yeah.
I'm pausing the us on this because this is a dramatic transformation in a young
Right.
person.
Right.
Dramatic. And when you describe a light that's more than white, you're describing what Kabbalists described as the Ein Sof, the
Oh.
light, the light that emanates from something that is way beyond us. It's light is the closest we can get to it than
Right.
describing it, but it's something high energy is the better way to think of it. And our eyes pick up something that we can only call white because that's all we know. But it was beyond white, and
Right.
you were touched by the divine spirit in that light is what I am getting the feeling of, and I will I'm glad to be talking with you about it because I'm beginning to feel an infusion of a little bit of that light in my head now coming through my crown
Right.
chakra. It's the kind of light that we need to be able to spread to other people to help them expand in the way you have, in the way you did. So part of what you are doing is helping, right, me, but other people too, who can imagine this girl at this lot near the Staten Island Ferry being emerged and merged and being instilled with becoming part of this Ein Sof, this endless light which came through to you.
Right. And it was interesting because my education began. And so the next day I went to school and I had to walk. You know how they tell the stories that you have to, my parents walked 5 miles to school. Well, I did. And we did it by ourselves, whether, no matter what, crossing major streets, because that back in the day we weren't helicopter moms and dads. So I went, and then on the way home, I heard a voice, and I used to walk up my block, but there was, there was a lot of ways because, the streets you could go down the next street and up and over and, all sorts of ways to get to your house. So I was going up, and there was like an angel or a voice that came in and said, "Don't go that way." And I said, "What? I'm tired. I want to go." And they said, "No, go around." So I said, I never know why I listened, but I always did to this particular frequency or voice. And so I went around, and the very next day, at that exact time, at that exact spot where I was, if I would have gone up the block just a little bit, there was a murder. So I listened to this voice over and over again. And then by the time I was 15, I was deeply immersed in
I'm going to
this.
pause you again one
Oh,
more
okay.
time because the lessons there are lessons in each one of these stories that you're telling us, lessons that I would like to have our audience hear. One of the most important things is to be able to recognize that hearing voices is not crazy as that is not necessarily crazy. It certainly gets you into psychiatric hospitals if you're overwhelmed by the voices talking to you. But if you're not overwhelmed and you can like listen, and then you said something really important about tuning into the frequency so that you know this is the voice I need to listen to. And that, and there are other voices hanging around trying to get into people's minds. And you were able to discern which one to listen to. And you did. I had an experience again along that same river, hearing a voice that, without going through the details, I've talked about it other times, really ended up, should I go left or right? I asked. The voice said, go left. And I said, why? And the voice said, you'll find out. And I keep finding out. I mean, this thing keeps going on. If I'd gone right, nothing would have happened. But if I'd gone left, it's been a great education in a lot of ways. So being able to listen, to trust, and then follow particular voices becomes a capacity each of us has. And where it comes from and who it is, what we don't know. But that's what you did, and you protected yourself. The voice helped you protect yourself from something that could have been pretty awful for you.
Right, right. But, you know, the voices, you have to make sure that you're listening to the right voices.
Yes.
Because, you know, when you are getting into learning more about spirituality and going beyond just normal spiritual, normal church or religion kind of thing, and you go and try and make that connection, everything exists, even a thought form exists in the universe. And so therefore, you almost have to use your gut feel or your because if you use your gut feel and say this voice is right, then it's probably 99.95% right. And if you have a feeling that I'm not sure about this, then don't listen. Because what happened, or if your mind starts thinking, oh, should I do this or shouldn't I do that? Then just wait. Because when my mantra is, you feel, know, and trust. When you feel that it's right, when you know that it's right, and when you trust that it's right, then it's going to be right.
Very good.
When I die, I want to have that on my gravestone. Feel, know, and trust, because you can do a lot with that. It's hard to do, but
it's practice. It's all this stuff is practice.
Right.
You got to practice this stuff. Yeah. So look, feel, know, and trust. Right on. Please continue. She didn't get dead. We got that part.
No, not yet. Although maybe at another time, you know. Anyway, so over the years, I explored, but, you know, I was always had kind of a scientific mind, as well as, you know, my left logical mind is very high. You got to prove it to me. And then on the right creative side, it says, oh, just let it go, because, you know, it's all happening for you anyway. So I said, okay. So I studied. So I read almost all the books on metaphysics in the New York Public Library by the time I was 15.
Wow.
Because I was just done, did that. By the time I was 21, I was busting psychics in New York. I would give them different names, different things, because guess what? I don't want somebody taking my friends for money when it's not right. And I didn't realize that I was psychic then. I didn't understand. And things would come in and I would learn, and people and places and whatever. And then, but when I was 21, I had.
Oh, wait a minute. I can't let busting psychics. I can't let that one go. Give us a good story about busting psychics.
Well, I would go in and give a false name. And then what I would do is I would dress differently, wear my hair differently, because, you know, people can pick up on, you know, on voices or sounds or whatever. And every single one I went in, I would say, okay, I'll pay you my money. Tell me what you're going to do. And then I would just look at them and say, well, that's not right. And that's not right. And that's not right. And maybe you shouldn't be doing this. I mean, because God sent me here. And I think that you probably should rethink this, because, you know, you're getting in trouble on the other side. So anyway, but none of them were real psychics. Okay. Well, let me say this. Everybody has psychic ability, every single one of us. It's how you develop it. So these were trying, and they were using cards, like we're going to get into tarot and stuff, but they weren't, you know, just because you're psychic doesn't mean you should be giving anybody advice. You know, when people, I give readings, and then when people have a mental process, you know, I'll tell them, look, you can see me once in a year, because nothing's going to change in that year. you know, because I'm not doing this for money. And I've never, ever, as doing being a psychic, have used my money from the psychic ability so that I can keep my gift pure. In other words, I own a radio network, healthylife.net, and that gives me my money to exist. So I don't have to compromise saying, oh, I got to eat today. I need some bread. Let me take some money. You know, I don't do that. So it's a very tough thing if you're going to be a true psychic, because, you know, you have to be 100% in your mind, body, and spirit. For example, I haven't had any wheat, dairy, you know, all the new diet that they're doing. I've been doing that since 1992. But anyway, let's get back just a little.
It's the busting the psychics thing that we can. Can you do anything about that phone?
Yes. We're actually recording downstairs. So I'm upstairs, but this phone is here and I can't turn this one
off. You can't turn it. Okay. But my
producer's getting it. So he's
okay.
Sorry about that.
This keeping it pure is really very important in being able to help people. When I did tarot card readings, I charged people a penny just to have some kind of interaction to make it look like something was going on. So I didn't realize how important that is. I kind of knew it, but you were doing that. But you were that the idea that this in-between thing, that people doing psychic work for money may also be trying to develop their psychic capacities, that there is something positive in them to try to be able to do it, but they distort themselves by trying to support themselves, in doing that. And I think that's an important message for all of our listeners and watchers.
I think so too. And the other thing that the people that want to use their psychic ability, you have to understand that, for example, if I tell you, Bernie, an untruth, and you, here we are, we might be reaching 1,000 people, right? And you're telling everybody to listen to that, right? On that truth, right? Well, what ends up happening is that I'm karmically responsible for that. So when I get over to the other side, I'm not just karmically responsible for telling you an untruth. I'm karmically responsible for the 1,000 people there. And believe me, when you get on the other side, you don't want to have those points there, you know. So you have to be very careful. You have to be, I try to be completely 100% in truth and integrity. And it's very important. As a matter of fact, on my site, lyndamckenzie.net, I have a psychic code of ethics. And whenever I teach a class, like I taught at Omega, how to increase psychic ability, expand it. Before anybody took the class, they had to sign the psychic code of ethics. And if they didn't sign it, they couldn't take the class. Because the psychic code of ethics kind of gives you the information on how to do things in truth and integrity. And it was an interesting class, because by the end of 5 days, I had people remote viewing. So it was really fun. But anyway, so at 21, I did hit a real psychic. And it was really interesting, and it kind of changed everything. And at that point, I don't know exactly what happened, but God came through me. There was that white light again, and I was out for 20 minutes. And then when I woke up, you know, kind of came to, they brought me upstairs. They did some palmistry thing, and they sent it off to this palmistry institute that actually was run by the FBI when I was 15 up in New York. It's crazy run here, you know? So I ended up at that point, got that voice came to me again. And he said, okay, no more studying metaphysics. I don't want you talking about it. I don't want you watching movies. I don't want you reading books. I don't want anything. So I ended up becoming an engineer for Continental Airlines. I was the first datacom engineer in any airline in the world, designed airports, got trained at NASA for air-to-ground radio. I mean, it was crazy, crazy. And so I moved out to California, and then it was around the harmonic convergence in 1987 that God said, and yet I would do things as things would come up. I would never lost spirituality, but I just never I didn't watch The Exorcist. I did what he wanted me to do. And then I started coming out again. And a friend of mine said, you know, you got to be doing readings. I says, I can give you common sense. I'm not giving you, I can't give you any psychic stuff. But she started sending people to me. And then I'd say, they'd want to pay me. I said, I don't take money. I'm giving you common sense. And they said, Dorian said you were going to do that, so that we're sending it to you. And within about 3 or 4 years, I was became a psychic for psychics, and they would come from all over the country and the world, and I would help them get back on track. In the meantime, I got chronic fatigue syndrome, and it was devastating. And I still had my daughter. I was a single mom running that up, and I ended up after 8 months of going to a psychiatrist that told me that I was not really, I made sure the psychiatrist had an intern degree, because, you know, back then nobody knew what chronic fatigue was, but I knew I was sick and it wasn't mental, and they were sending me here and there. And I said, okay. And so I ended up, it was a very interesting thing. I went to I found this guy who was a hypnotherapist and a psychologist, and I called him up and I said, look, I see that you're using hypnosis. Can you teach me how to heal myself? And I went in and we worked together, and then I used hypnosis and I healed myself with his help. It took about 6 months, and we ended up healing, and he gave me all this book on hypnosis. And then I took a course, and then I wrote books on hypnosis and whatever. And that just, so one thing in your life leads you to another, to another, to another. And then finally at 37, I said, okay, I'll be a psychic. So, and that's the story. You know,
one of the ideas we've talked about is that you got chronic fatigue syndrome and you found a way to heal yourself through the hypnosis. But what did it mean to you psychically, psychologically, spiritually, to have gotten chronic fatigue syndrome?
It was the greatest gift I could ever get.
That's important for us to hear. Yes.
Because you see, what happened was, as I was a type A personality, just business, business, business. And I was, you need about 8 things in your life to have a complete life: community, self, you know, all these, you know, family. You need this like piece of a pie. And I was only doing like 3 of them. And I needed to put community in and all this other stuff. And so chronic fatigue stopped me. And I had to take a look at myself. And what it did, the hypnosis started balancing my left and my right brain. And I had, for years, from the time I was 8, I would test myself and test myself and test myself on my psychic ability. So I knew what voices to listen to, what was real, how it was working. And so this solidified everything and balanced my brain so that I could work on both levels and go out and beyond that level and really get into the meat of spirituality. Good story for coincidence.
Would you describe the balance that you had to reach, please?
Oh, it's hard to explain. It's just that you have to learn to trust the right side of your brain more than the left. In other words, the left logical side will help you do A, B, C, D, E. But the right side of your brain, it kind of knows what you need. And it will supply everything you need. Your body's working for you 365 days a year. Your cells in your body replace. You don't have to be sick. You know, you just have to understand and release, slow down the chatter of the left side and allow the creativity of the right side to come in and take over. And I'm only in right side right now, most of the time. I mean, I have it, but majority of me is usually out there somewhere. So,
your logical one is automatically involved here, I can tell. It's there, but you don't have to pay attention to it, I'm getting. It's kind of been put into automatic, because that experience of working for the airlines and doing that data analysis made your left brain very, very sharp. You really developed it. And what's so nice to be able to do is develop that rationality thing, but not have to be caught up in it and be able to have that make an analysis and some deductions in a way that works for you and that works well enough with the right side of your brain, because that's what they have to do. It has to be a coordinated thing. And you're describing yourself being in a kind of automatic where you have that balance going and you just go. And I'll say that you got some left brain. I can tell you got that in there, but it's kind of automatic. And that's a wonderful thing to see, as well as for you to be able to operate that way. So I think
because God wanted me, I went through every strata of life. It's really interesting. My life has just been wonderfully blessed. You know, I went from very poor to lower middle class to middle class to nouveau riche. I was married to a commodities broker and we flew to Germany for dinner and had houses all over. And I went into jet set, you know, being asked to go to the Australian Open and go into the Orient Express. And I went to, and I lived with old money. So the whole thing is that the fun thing was, the one thing I found that was constant, the only thing that money buys you is time to do what you want to do. And if you're doing what you want to do, you always get enough. So the people that are angst about money, they have to think back in their lives a little bit and say, am I through that period? Yes, you are. You know, so we have to make sure that we're, again, feeling, knowing, and trusting that things are going to be okay. And they usually are. We're sitting there going through things only to learn life lessons so that we can move up and get rid of them. And once we learn a life lesson, it never comes back, because we never experience things exactly in the same way ever. Yeah. Because we've grown, right?
Yeah. And I think it's important to underline that the money is there so you can enough so that you can do what you want to do. And that's the freedom. Then you're wealthy. I've been wealthy at $7,000 a year. And that was a while ago, but I was rich because I didn't have to think about the money. I could do what I wanted to be able to do. And that's such an important lesson. So please continue with now after the fatigue syndrome.
Well, I thought I would give you another coincidence story.
Okay, please do.
Okay. So when I was about 16, I was dating this guy named Denny, and he was cute. And anyway, so he was Pisces. And so what happened was that we went to Coney Island and we went on the Ferris wheel. Well, about 3 months before, I had had a dream about going on a Ferris wheel, and the Ferris wheel, the one of the cars would swing out and in, and that it broke and it went down to the ground and I was killed. And of course I woke up before that. But because I was getting a lot of precognizant dreams, I wanted to figure out which ones were right and which ones weren't. So important. What I did was I would write the dreams down and I would give them to my friend Eileen, who lived, you know, a couple of blocks away. And I just tell her, keep these for me. And she'd read them and we'd read them and we'd say. And so we went to Coney Island and we were going on this car and we were with another couple. And there was a hole in the bottom of the floor, the same way in my dream. I tried to get out and Denny said, no, come on, that's silly, silly. I'm going, no, I'm telling you. And the thing swung out. I never thought there was a Ferris wheel that the car swung out. I sat there and all of a sudden we heard this, and the thing, we went down and I screamed. And then the guy stopped the Ferris wheel. We got out and I kind of walked away. But as we were walking away, the guy said, don't let anybody in that car. It's broken. And put a sign on it to not to let anybody on in the car. So Denny was laughing at me. He goes, yeah, you had a dream. I said, no, I'm telling you, I had a dream. I said, wait. So I said, we went over to Eileen's house. And I said, Eileen, could you take out the dream that I wrote you about the Ferris wheel? And she said, okay. And so she did. And it was exactly what had happened. So, and that's what happens to me every single day. I mean, every day there's things that happen, because at this point in time, I wake up in the morning and I say, okay, what am I supposed to do? And I'm just led on what I do. And I don't think, you know, I wrote my new book. I haven't written a book in 23 years, but this is a great one. And so I wrote it, and now I have to go through the whole procedure, A, B, C, D, to get the book out. And I just said, okay, I'll let go. And it seemed that whatever I had to do would just come in, and it would be easier and better. So if we trust that we get everything that we need, I think it's a good thing.
It is a good thing. It's a very good thing. To be able to do what you just said you're able to do. You wake up in the mornings and you have this something guiding you, telling you what you need to do.
Right. Well, first thing I get up in the morning, I lay in bed and I say five things I'm grateful for. You know, I'm grateful that I have a bed. I'm grateful that I'm warm. I'm grateful that I have food. I'm grateful that I have a job. You know, just, you know, I'm grateful that I have family. I give five things and then I just get up and I kind of go, okay, what is there to do? But it's always led. Like today, I woke up, I was nervous last night. And I didn't know why. And I just said, I'm not nervous about interviewing with you because I see your heart and it's great.
And thank you. So, thank you.
I just said, I don't know what it is. And when I got up this morning, my computer system was down and I didn't think I could do the interview. But of course, you know, being a computer engineer, they can't stop me. So I found another way to do it. But this is what happens. And so I'll get a feeling, I won't know what it is, but I'll wake up in time and I'll say, okay, let me go down and look at the computers, or I'll try this when I shouldn't be trying it. And then there's always something, the reason. And if you learn to trust that, you get more and more and more until you live your life like that. And it is an adventure, I can tell you.
It's an adventure. And I'm writing my next book is called The Adventures of Dr. Coincidence. And they are the stories of my life, starting from when I was 8 or 9 with all the coincidences that happened in my life. But I want to be able to show our audience the cover of your book, which is almost out now. I mean,
it's January 15th. It was just released.
So here it is, Symbols of You. And it's an incredible categorization, tables of all kinds of psychically interesting things that Linda has put together somehow. I mean, I don't know how she did it, because there's so much stuff in there that you have put together. And I congratulate you just on the amount of content that you've had in this book. So
It took me 3 years, and I went back to the 1800s, and I took the best two out of three for these 42 ancient topics in this book. And then in the book it says if you disagree with any of these, take yours. Yours is right.
So I went through some of it. I mean, there's a lot of charts in there, and I got to be able to pick out some of my favorite subjects. And I want to start with my first favorite subject, which is trees. You have a wonderful section where you've written probably more than maybe you've written in other parts about trees. And I just start with telling you that I have this set of trees in the forest near here that kind of stopped me maybe 10 years ago. I don't know how they stopped me, but I had a look at them. And I called one the king and the one the queen. And I started having conversations with them. And they would, it was literally telepathic. I mean, we had dialogues, and they told me that I should introduce this person to that person and blah, blah. There's a lot of things, and it worked out well, so that the two people I put together both have helped me get the Coincidence Project going, and that was years later. So they're pretty helpful, and I've been able to imagine myself being a tree, and I've been one of them. And so after 7 years or so, I discovered that there was a third tree. So there was these two, and there's one right behind them, but I never saw it. And it was like, what? How did I miss that? So King, Queen, and Horus, maybe from the Egyptian, of the child of Osiris and I keep forgetting her name, but that so that now I get go up there and there's like we become part of a rhombus where there's them, me, and there's the child or Horace, there's the two, and then there's me, and then I step into this fork-sided thing, and I become transformed into some other being or feeling, and I'm part of them, and they're part of me, and it's such a wonderful feeling being with them, and it just so happens that I like to sing in the forest and I work on my singing, and there's particular songs that they like me to sing. So I sing to them and it's almost like I trade with them. They tell me stuff, they feel with me, they can't sing. So I sing to them. So that's some of my background with trees. So I'd really like to have our audience hear about you and your tree, what you know of trees and your experience with them.
Ever since I was a little girl, you know, when you live in the city so much, you know, although Staten Island has a lot more woods in it than the city, but I was always attracted to trees. And trees would, you know, we would climb them. My mother and father were particularly having a fight and there were things being thrown around, I could go hide under the bushes by the trees and I'd feel like safe. And I would touch them and I would feel the energy and feel everything. And sometimes I could look and I could actually see inside the tree and could see how the water was going through the cells and whatever. It was just, and, you know, and I would share stories with the trees because the trees would tell me about the woodpecker and how it was hurting it. And I'm sitting there going, woodpecker, please, you know, and then, you know, so everything to me deserves respect. And every living and non-living thing, because everything is energy, and even as a little girl. So when I was...
I'd like to know, just for my sake, perhaps, but other people, that the communication of the trees to you about the woodpecker, for example, how did that communication come to you?
When I touch a tree, it's almost like the information comes from the touch through me into my head. And well, actually, almost into my heart, really, you know, because there's an affinity there. And there's a lot of wisdom, you know, that I in trees. And, you know, I would ask them things, you know. And, you know, my grandfather had we lived on the top floor. My uncle and aunt lived on the second floor. My grandmother and grandfather and uncle lived in the basement, right, in the stories. And my grandfather had a garden and he would have, you know, grow wine, grapes, and the wine was terrible, tasted like, forget it. But, and everybody would say, oh, grandpa, it tasted like good. And my grandmother would say, tastes like, you know, he would have a garden and he'd have peach trees, you know, and I loved peaches and I would go to the garden and I'd say, oh, thank you for your peaches. And, can you make them particularly sweet? And they would, you know, so, you know, they would tell me which one to pick. They would say, look, when you're going to pick berries or you're going to pick trees or fruit, if it's too hard to pull off, it's not ready for you. You only take what is willingly given. So good. They gave me many lessons with that. So later on, when my grandson, you know, he was about three, and I took him to the park, and I'd say to him, I touched the tree, and I'd say, here, touch the tree with me. I said, do you hear the stories? And he says, no. And I said, okay, let me tell you the story. And so I told him about the story that the tree was telling me. And then all the kids in the park came over, and I was sitting there telling stories. And then he would run, tell me this tree, Grandma, tell me this tree. And so we would go from tree to tree, and I would tell the stories of the trees. And then I would tell the kids, put your hands on the tree. Maybe you can hear the stories too. And I said, you can always do this. And it was really great because at the end, my grandson would say, this tree has a story. And he told me the story and I put my hand on it. I verified the story and it was true. Ta-da! Yeah, passing that along, you know.
The scientists at work, yes. Yeah. Yeah, the need for that. Yeah, those are good stories. There's a lot of what synchronicity tends to be about is illustrated right there with what you're talking about, which is you have to believe it's possible. You have to think that it could be. You have to act as if it's true that trees can communicate with you.
Well, it's the belief system. You know, we are, unfortunately, because there's never a mistake, but we are geared or raised by society to see a small fraction of what really is out
there.
Yes,
yes.
And so what we want to do is, if we allow ourselves to take and expand our belief systems and experience them, we will grow exponentially and we will get more spiritual and have more experiences. But we have to begin by allowing to understand that really everybody is completely unique, but we are part of the collective consciousness. So we're just energy, but we're very unique energy and we're all very special and no one's more important or less important than anybody else. The president of the United States down to a guy that sweeps the floor. We never know what that guy sweeping the floor might help somebody else to do that might save the world. So we can never put anybody in a box. And we should never think that somebody that has a lot of money or a lot of power. I loved it when Michelle Obama said, you know, I thought when I got to Washington that all these politicians would be extremely bright and understanding and, you know, have all this. And she said, and they were just like you and me, you know. So we have to remember too, you know, that everybody is just people and they have the same wants and needs and they may have a little bit more information, but if we're balanced, we can get the same information. You know, everything exists in the universe. For example, if I have a problem and I want to talk to Albert Einstein, I know how to navigate the energy and say, hey, Uncle Al, give me some information.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I've been having more what I feel contact with Carl Jung lately.
Right.
And Jung,
I see that.
And you see that?
Uh-huh.
Tell
yeah.
Me what, tell
and
me
he's,
what, tell
he's
me what,
doing that. I can, I'm sorry. I'm almost always in psychic mode, right? Anyway, but what I'm seeing is that he wants you to take what he's doing and incorporate different kinds of aspects of what he's doing and bring it into a 21st century way of looking at it. So in other words, taking what he's got, using the experiences that you've got to extend that out in a new way. That's what I'm feeling. And he's there to support you. And you can talk to him anytime you want. You can, you know. And in the beginning, if what you can do to start it off, you know, so that you understand, is that say there's, and this is for everybody out there, if you have someone that's passed over and you want to talk to them, the best way to do it in the beginning is to say right before you go to sleep, I want to talk to this person. But when you do that, you have to say, I want to remember when I wake up, because intention is very important. And then keep a pencil and paper by your bed. And then when you wake up, the minute that you wake up, whatever thought you had, even if it's a word or a color or whatever, put it all down. If you continue to do that, you will be able to communicate all the time. So I communicate now at my age. I'll be 74 this year, but you know, I can't believe it. I think I'm 15, but
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
You know, so, you know, but at this point, if I have a computer problem, my girl that used to do the computers, she passed over about 4 years ago, and I'll say, Barbara, and she'd say, don't get upset, do this. Then another coincidence, she passed over. All my network, we couldn't find any of how, you know, I run a 24/7, 40 host radio network, okay, that reaches 2.6 million people a month, over 75 channels of distribution, right? And we're doing all positive talk, mind, body, spirit, only natural health, right? And so I have to be up because otherwise the telephone calls come in and blah, blah, blah. And if I can't get to the network stuff and the passwords, I'm sitting there. So I'm on the phone saying, I don't have any idea what these passwords are. And I said, damn it, Barbara, you should have stayed. You know, you didn't have to leave. What are we going to do? She says, and I hear from the other side, she's laughing at me, as most of them do on the other side, including God. She's laughing and she says, okay, calm down. Try A, B, C, D, E, F, 1, G, G, G. And I do it and I get in.
Right? Now that's
another coincidence. That's what I'm saying. You know,
That's where I want to get a sense of what you mean by your experience of coincidence. When I was a part-time hippie on Haight Street, I'd be in this place called the Yellow Submarine, which was a marijuana dealing house. And I'd be sitting there and around these candles, and I have these experiences of these old Jewish women laughing about what I was doing.
They probably were.
I mean, that's why I'm so I have not had that confirmed until right now that they're laughing. Now, I think they were laughing. They were whatever I was doing, I thought was pretty funny too. I mean, but it was still weird. How come, in your view, how come they're laughing?
Well, because they think it's funny, you know, that you're getting upset, you know, because there's nothing really to get upset about, you know. On their end, on the other side, you're looking at things as if you're a witness. You don't have. In other words, there's a different. That's another discussion.
You don't have an attachment to it.
Correct.
You can look at it as a witness. Yeah. What I was doing was a lot of fun.
Right.
And it wasn't like I got to have the password. It was like I'm sitting there and it's like, what's all this laughing about? I was having a good time learning about a lot of stuff, including astrology and tarot cards and stuff. I was having a good and seeing this hippie activity, because it was so interesting to be an observer and a participant in what was going on in the late 60s. But I haven't had anybody tell me, yes, I've had the experience of people on the other side laughing. They were sitting around this, something that looked like a TV set. It was something else, and they were watching me and just laughing. And I just, what's going on here?
But it's true. It's really true. And so you know, a lot of the stuff that you think is untrue is really true. There's some kind of basis in truth, even, you know, so you need to not rule out things, people that are you feeling differently or whatever. There's reasons that you're feeling that.
Yeah. And that's why I need confirmation, because you are confirming something that I thought was true. But when you have somebody else, and that's why we're so interdependent here. It's another way of saying how we're connected. So Linda McKenzie is telling me years later, Bernie, they were laughing. They were up there doing that. And I appreciate being able to be informed about that, because it seemed like it was pretty true, just like the voices. Now I have a question. I have another question. I think it's so cool that you wake up in the morning and you don't have to think about it. You just know what you're going to do. And it's that lying in bed and waiting for the information to come to you that I experience early in the morning when I wake up too, that got to do that. Sometimes it comes, but that taking the notes when I have just started talking to Jung by saying, I never called him Carl Gustav. His middle name is Gustav. I say Carl Gustav something or other. So I'm becoming more familiar with him by calling him Carl Gustav. And there's going to be a conference called a Galileo conference coming up that I'll be a part of, that synchronicity is going to be the main idea that we're going to be focused on. And I want to be able to make a good contribution to that. And I very much appreciate your psychic view, because it's what I have, but not so clearly until you said it. that I need to bring Jung's ideas in about synchronicity into the 21st century.
Right.
And that's what I've done. And what I, people ask me if I'm a Jungian, I'm not a Jungian. I don't follow Jung. I followed after Jung. And that means I come with some of his inspiration, right. But I came up with the stuff before I ever discovered him. So that I've done this somewhat on my own.
Right.
In the middle of what you're talking about, though, that I think is so important is this, that you talk with God.
I do.
And how you know you're talking with God is my question.
I think, you had to make me think on that one because there's a knowing, that who it is. But I think when I saw him when I was 8, there was a frequency and the voice, and that's the one I follow. And he said, that's the one I follow. So what I did was when my grandson was kind of showing me that he had some psychic ability. And when I was growing up, I had nobody to talk to. So I sat him down and he was about, I would say, again, he was just about 4 or 5, and I said to him, I said, I want you to listen. He asked me some questions and I never shoved anything down his throat or said, oh, you got to do this. If he asked me a question, I knew that I was supposed to give him an answer. It's not like you're going to do it this way, but when he was young, when he was like 1 or 2, I'd sit down with him and say, okay, here's the skeletal book. This is a bone. The next time we'd say, this is a muscle. So I give him, then the next time we do birds. So this time he asked me a question. And I said, he said that he was seeing things by his bed. And I said to him, do you believe in ghosts, Grandma? And I said, like Casper the ghost? And what does he know about ghosts, right? And he said, no. And I said, he says, they're by my bed at night. And I said, okay. I said, so here's the thing. I said, you can tell the ghosts to go away and they have to go away. And I said, but if they don't go away, understand that Grandma is connected to you and I will know if there's anything wrong and you can just call my name and I will just magically appear and I'll go boom, boom. I'll get them right out of the room. And he goes, okay. He goes, but that's okay, Grandma. He goes, that's okay. I can do it because I have superpowers. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah. He goes, yeah. And I said, well, where'd you get them from? He goes, from you, Grandma. And I said, I never told him about anything, right? And so I said, okay. So I said, do you hear voices? And he said, yes. And I said, okay, you hear a lot of voices? He says, yes. I said, look, I want to teach you something. I said, I want you to sit down on the couch and close your eyes. And I want you to hear, I'm going to let God speak to you. I want you to remember this voice so that you only listen to this voice, no one else's voice. And I said, so I'm going to try and get him to talk to you and you hear his voice. He said, okay, this kid who had never been in yoga or whatever, got into the position where he crossed his legs, went like this, closed his eyes. And then I said, God, would you give him your voice? And I felt God give him the voice. I saw a smile on his face, felt that white light around. And he opened his eyes and I said, did you hear the voice? And he said, yes. I said, do you have that voice? And he said, yes. I said, believe me now, never, never listen to any other voice but that one. I said, on the other side. Because he'll grow and he'll learn how to listen to spirit. Listen, when somebody dies, they're the same as the other, as they were on this way. So I was doing documentaries in England, right? And Derek Okoro was talking to Sam, and Sam was a baker or something, and he was his guide. And he was number one psychic in London. And I was with Peter James, who did sightings and all sorts of stuff here. And we're doing this psychic stuff. And I said to Derek, Derek, what are you talking to Sam for? He's a baker. I said, you know, he only knows this much. I mean, he can ask other people for you because, you know, everybody, knowledge over there is, you know, you, there's no, if you think you're holding something back, that you have a secret, there are no secrets in the universe. If you know how to use them and get there, you can know anything. Okay. And so I said, you know, but, God is the strongest power, you know, there is. It's, I don't care if you want to call it a ball of light or love or whatever you want to call it, you know, whatever you want to call it is fine, but it exists, right? And so I said, why wouldn't you do that? I mean, for me to use, I never use divination tools like tarot cards or anything like that because, you know, I get all the information direct connect. That's the ultimate truth. Why would I go through something that might have something attached to it? That, for example, tarot cards. Sometimes when I did tarot when I was 15, and I liked them, I thought they were great. But the problem is that they'll tell you you're going to cross a street, but they will not tell you you're going to get hit by a car when you cross that street. So they give you a piece, a slice of it. And if you're very good at it, you can get a lot of intuition on it. But when you're direct connect, and everybody has the ability to be direct connect to God, everybody, okay? Prayer's the start of it, but you know, you can just be there, just ask for it. And so why would you do something else? You know, it's only if you want to clarify that what you're doing is right. And again, that comes back to feel, trust, and know. So
Now that
anyway, we're going through a lot of stuff here, aren't we?
we are going through a lot of stuff, and this we're coming to the end of our time, and this last part of it, where you are encouraging people direct connect, is very, very important. I think the trees are a way to direct connect. When I see their branches, and these are very tall trees reaching up toward the sky and their roots in the earth, and that I can identify with that, and that I'm a trunk with feet and reaching up, that those branches up there are like antennas that are reaching into what I call the psychosphere, our mental atmosphere, because my idea is that there's a step in this where there's something that's more real than we think, where we exchange energy and information with each other in the psychosphere. And in that psychosphere, there are some entities that exist. It's a real place. And rather than thinking of it as something ethereal, I mean, there's really some people, entities in there, and that's the way they communicate to us. Some of them are s stuck there, some of them want to stay there, and many of them have gone on to someplace else. But there's a lot in there, and through that, in that, the trees for me make a connection to start into that psychosphere that can tell me s stuff that connect me and do the direct connect. If I direct connect through the trees,
That's correct.
that's practice to
Right.
direct connect outside of the forest.
Correct. And there's a difference between using tarot cards or divination tools, which, by the way, in my book, Symbols of You, there are dice divination and cards and tarot and all sorts of stuff in there, palm reading, but because it's fun. But when you're touching a tree that's a living being older than us, you know, they have so much knowledge. It's a living thing that you can, that is, I think trees are blessed by God. I think water is blessed by God. You know, so when you're doing things like this, you can use that to help you as a adjunct to go up there. There's no problem with that with me. I just don't, using tools to do that, to get answers, you can get answers, but still check the answers, you
Check
know,
the answers.
direct
Check the
connection.
answers. What you have had the gift of doing, which has been a problem for you also. We haven't talked about that. To be hit with the white light like that when you're 8 and like, oh, what is this?
You never fit in anywhere.
You don't fit in anywhere.
You fit in nowhere.
And that's part of the reason that I do this coincidence project. We're having our launch on Saturday, a couple of days from now. And it's for people who have experienced a lot of meaningful coincidences and don't know what to do with them. Right. So you need to have a community, as you're talking about. And I'm building a synchronicity community, which I think Jung would be very, very much in favor of, as a way to help those at that level. You are functioning at a wonderfully wonderful level for me, where you are inspiring me to believe that I can trust the direct connect more than I have, and that there are spirits around that are helping me. I've kind of known that, but you're helping confirm. I need confirmation of things because I've worked my way up. I didn't get hit by white light. I keep going like that. Up the tree is another way of saying it. I'm a squirrel climbing up to the top branches. It's like you're confirming that for me. And I want to thank you very, very much, Linda McKenzie, for what you've done for me today and what I think you will have done for many people in my audience and what you're able to do with your radio network. So I very much appreciate being on your show and having you reciprocate by being on mine. And the education is wonderful. And thank you very much, Linda.
Oh, you're so welcome. You know, if I can help one person a day, and that person can help somebody else and tells something that's a truth to somebody else, we create a domino effect. And right now, we need to spiritually come together more than any other time, because we have an opportunity. We're in the Aquarian age again, which I was in and I loved. And we made tremendous strides during that time until other things came in to try and stop us from doing that. Now we're better at it. And so the more people that we can get spiritually together with a frequency, you know, I want to say this to your listeners. You can contribute to the healing of the planet and to collective consciousness just by being in love and being happy and picking joy. And so when you're in a dire circumstance, you're always working from your lower chakras, you know, and you need to get up to the heart chakra and up. And one of the ways that you can do that is humming. Very fun, but it doesn't seem like it works. But if you go, the frequency immediately jumps from any of your lower chakras where your depression stays and whatever, blah, blah, and you get it into the heart chakra, immediately everything in the universe, you're connected. And the more that we can stay in that heart chakra and up and giving out love, because that's the one thing that there's enough of. You can't ever give too much love and you can't ever get too much love. And by the way, that's the only thing you take with you on the other side, is how much love you give and how much love you get. The rest of the stuff gets laid in the back, okay? So, I mean, you have memories, you have all this, you don't have the senses of taste, touch, and whatever, but you have the knowing. And so we want to stay as positive as we can, because that's what's going to help the world. And you can help the world. Everybody can help the world. And that's important right now. We need all the help we can get to get out of the wars and out of the stuff that most people around the world don't want, right? So we want to move this up so that we can be blessings rather than problems. And that's it. And buy my book, Symbols of You, on Amazon and any place in the bookstores.
Amen, sister.
Yeah.
Amen, sister.
Psychosphere is our mental atmosphere, like a hologram of cosmic consciousness.